So when you look at pig production, for me, it falls into three areas, and they've got to join up in everything that I'm doing. So if I suggest a strategic change in husbandry management, it has to encompass economics, ethics, and the environment. And in that, I mean efficiency and responsibility.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production.
Digestrum Finish helps optimize feed efficiency, supporting healthy growth in finisher pigs. Enhance your profitability today. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/finish.
Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Sidlines, an Ecolab company, offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene in the swine industry.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Swine It Podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host today, and I'd like to introduce you to our guest, Stephen Hall. Stephen is the owner of Stephen Hall Management Quill and Pig Limited. He's a production strategist, international data analyst, and a writer. And Stephen was my guest over a year ago, where we discussed his pig production philosophy guilt watch together. Hopefully you were able to listen to that episode. And if not, go back in your diary and grab that one. But welcome back to our show, Stephen.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. So Stephen has worked in pig production over 54 years, and his working goal is that his production clients develop an evidence-based business strategy to maintain a production output that is financially efficient, dignifies the workforce, is with integrity, environmentally sound, and above all, simple. And that's really what I like about Stephen. He's a deep thinker, but tries to put things in a simple way. And so excited to talk with him again today. So Stephen, even though you've been our guest before and you introduced yourself before, just give us just a short background and kind of what you're working on now, your expertise, before we get started.
I don't come from a farming family. I grew up in a rural town, but at the age of 12, I went to work on a little small holding, and I fell in love with the pig side of everything that was going on there. Saw a litter of pigs born, and that was it. And I've been in pig production ever since. I worked for over 20 years in pig production, commercial pig production, on farm, always in mixed enterprise. I enjoy all the aspects of farming. Pigs is my passion. And I met my wife Sue and married. We had a family of six children. Things got a bit difficult in terms of finances when it comes to raising six children on a farm worker's wage. So I bit the bullet and went and worked for a breeding company called NPD that were very quickly taken over by PIC. And I was a breeding stock salesman at that point. So I got the other side of the farm gate and learned a little bit about the expectations of farmers around the country. PIC's takeover gave me a wonderful opportunity because having settled the sales team as we did, I was then asked if I'd like to go into production, which is where I love to be. And I think they picked that up in me. And so I became the boar production manager for the UK, at a very interesting time. I've been very fortunate in my life. Every time I've changed, it's been just an exciting time in the industry. And this was the time when we were beginning to develop boar studs and really develop artificial insemination. But we're at the end of a time of putting live boars out on farm. But we've gone through a period of the outdoors really growing in this country. So I was putting teams of boars together, not just single boars on the lorry. And we did a lot of work in terms of getting the customer's profile, what they really expected. Because up until then, we'd never delivered the same boar twice to these people, and it frustrated them. And very often, we had to replace animals. So that was exciting. We really got that going. We got the replacement rate down from, just over 12% down to less than 3% in the time that I did that job. And then I went over into helping to build a customer customer relations system, really, that saw everything sorted out within a 24-hour period, if we could. From there, I went to Agrisoft in the Danish company, decided to do a startup in the UK. And again, it was brilliant. It was 1999, and everybody was afraid that all the computers were going to crash when we went into the new century. And we had the only Windows program on the block, really. So everybody, I was able to persuade people to move to the Windows program. Of course, nothing actually went wrong, but by then we'd started a bit of a tidal wave. And I consolidated, I think, four or five of the standard programs in my own country. So we really only had one program predominant. And from that, we then took over the responsibility for the national statistics and all this kind of thing and reporting. And I really enjoyed that. They were a great company to work for, very forward thinking. And they taught me an awful lot and made all sense of all the work I'd done in the years preceding that. So as I approached 60, I went to work on my own to pursue a line they weren't going in, a direction they weren't going in, which was advanced metrics. We were stuck with the metrics we'd had for the last 50 years. Nobody seemed to want to change because they were looking at wean per cell per year and FCR, and that was about it, really. And that could sell the genetics and the food and all the rest of it. I knew that we weren't looking at the pigs properly. We weren't really working out what was happening in that continuous flow recording. So I've been working on life cycle analysis now for nearly 12 years. And within that production cycle analysis, within life cycles, when it comes down to the sows and the life cycles of the individual piglets by parity as well. So really got deep into stuff. And so it's I'm at a point now where I'm continuing to develop these metrics, and I'm looking, to try and find some investment somewhere to really, build onto what we already have, which is some fantastic recording programs that, unfortunately, as far as I can see, are more interested in the technology, the way in which they can, deliver the information rather than going after more information that can be really helpful. And in that, I'm looking to work across technologies, talking with other companies with other technologies, not just the actual performance, but the cameras in the pens, the environmental controls, these kind of things. And I think I look at when you put light through a prism, it gives you we see the primary colors as it comes out the other side of the prism, if you like. But between those primary colors are extended colors. And I think that's where we're at as an industry. We've got to start looking at what our extended colours are and how they actually take us across to another part of the whole technological offering within, and then work together. And that's where I'd love to see us collaborating across companies in different disciplines of the technology and the sciences, and bring them all together to the benefit of the commercial reality of pig farming. So two things I look at: pigs and people, a commercial reality. They're the two things that concentrate my thinking, really. And I want to bring, everything I can to both the pigs and the people, and drive the commercial reality from the selling side. The marketing have some wonderful strap lines and all the rest of it, but there's not a lot of that commercial reality resonating in that. And that's why I think there's been a slow uptake of technology in some ways. We've got to get it down to that commercial reality and then show what it can really do. So that's where I'm at the moment. Very exciting.
Why risk it? Your herd may have antigenic gaps that are not being covered by the products currently available. Custom-made vaccines provide a unique advantage in that they can be formulated to a herd-specific bacterial and viral needs. Choose the exact isolates, adjuvant, packaging and size you need with Vaxinova for a vaccine formulated to your needs. Find out more by visiting us at vaxinova.us.com. That's vaxinova.us.com.
Yeah, great. Well, with that, we can see your passion for our industry and definitely appreciate all of your years of experience coming from the farm to helping us understand really the bottom line and the economics, but still where to keep that passion, right?
Yes.
So today I want to dive into your philosophy called the 3E principle of economics, ethics, and environmental efficiency and responsibility as it relates to pig production. So start us off by describing this concept.
The concept is you know, to me, everything is a spectrum. It's not narrow. It's not there's not a beginning and an end. So when you look at pig production, for me, it falls into three areas, and they've got to join up in everything that I'm doing. So if I suggest a strategic change in husbandry management, it has to encompass economics, ethics, and the environment. And in that, I mean efficiency and responsibility. So with the economics, where that drove me to was life cycle analysis. And that was at the heart of life cycle analysis. We are losing so much your money through lost opportunity. And that really is painful. When you really open virtually any herd up, you can find bigger chunks of money disappearing that you can't see in the accounting, to be quite honest with you, because it's continuous flow production and it's just cash flow analysis. So we don't stop anything. So with life cycle analysis, you bring in your intake of replacement gilts for a period. Initially, when I started doing it, I took the four quarters of the year. So you'd quarter one, I would bring all the replacements in and I would identify them in a cohort. And every report I made that the program makes, providing it will pick the cohort up within its architecture, I can then report that cohort as a herd within the herd. And I can follow that cohort from the time the first animal has entered to the time the last animal is culled. I then have a complete picture of a life cycle of a cohort of animals. Multiply that up, however which way you want to make that cohort, you are now following reality through the commercial, road that you're on. And that began to, and that threw up all sorts of things. You know, we're wasting money all over the place, quite honestly. And that took me to sow retention. And basically, sow retention I was looking at sow retention at parity five, because parity five was the optimum economical grouping of production cycles, one through to five. That will extend as we get better at what we're doing. But at the time I looked at it, you know, after five, it was a disaster, really, in terms of many of the herds I looked at, economically speaking. Unfortunately, the worst part of that was looking at the first three production cycles, because you don't break even until your third litter is delivered. So the sow will actually break even quite early on in her third pregnancy, economically, within the flow of your cash flow and everything else. But you still got to get that litter out of her. So we start getting an engine room going at parity three. And through four and five, they really peak in terms of their physical output performance and the prolificacy that the breeding companies have worked so hard to improve, and they've done a fantastic job. But if we digress for a moment, we have this big issue at the moment kicking around with sow mortality, and everybody's upset about how it's rising. That sow mortality figure is almost meaningless to me. Apart, the vets would look at it and want to do something about it, and I agree with that. But economically, it's a meaningless figure. Because we have 100% sow mortality in every herd, you know, in the industry, because you've either got death in production, which is the sow mortality everybody is focusing on, or you've got elective culling, which is the other part of. So if you've got 10% sow mortality, death in production, you've got 90% elective culling, and you've then got to look at where that elective culling is taking place. If it's taking place in the early parities and you're pumping in replacements, then the economic impact of that is vastly bigger, greater loss than your death in production sow mortality. So you start to open those things up and really try to understand the economics of the business, really. So that's the first E, that's the economics. I want to understand everything. And within that, I include looking at the revenue liability of the herd. In its, we have in industry, pig production has one of the highest revenue liabilities in industry. In other words, farmers have thousands, millions of pounds tied up, depending on the size of their business, continuously. And that's come out in this country recently with our new government and their farmers tax. They think that the farmers are rich because they're asset rich, but they're actually cash poor. And pig farming is one of the most cash poor in that sense. And if you were to stop a business, and this is where I've looked at it most closely, if a business is terminated, it brings you into the ethics. That's a nice segue into the second one, the ethics of what we do. So the ethics of early culling of animals, because we haven't prepared the gilts properly, that's one of the biggest reasons. I think there needs to be an increasing conversation now with the genetic companies. I've been trying to have the conversation for some years, but it's beginning to filter through now in the advertising, but they are looking at the phenotype, they're looking at the physicality of the animal much more. So we need that genetics and the phenotype to come together now in all that they're doing, and we need to learn from them how we manage these gilts. And we're just beginning. I've been asking for this information for quite a while, and it is now coming through. Some very good papers coming out from some of the breeding companies, and what that is doing is addressing the commercial reality of gilt failure in the early parities, and therefore the tremendous economic load is the commercial reality for a lot of farmers. And what they need on their side is a much better strategy for precision husbandry. So that's where these extended lights in the prism, if you like, come together. You know, the operational teams need visitation regularly in their meetings from representatives of their suppliers to take them through more detail, for the supplier to understand the problems that are going on the farm, that when you're on the farm day in, day out, you might not see, but a fresh pair of eyes comes in, lights up very quickly. People in the operational teams are only too willing to take on new ideas, but they're not just going to read them off a sheet of paper, you know, with a glossy picture. They need to have a conversation, and they need to be able to go into the detail of their own worries and fears about the things they're doing and why they're not working. So, and the ethics is very important, because we get into animal welfare.
So before we move on a little bit out of that guilt and what the kind of supplier companies are doing, give me some more, just a little bit of example. Is it about nutrition? Is it about housing? Are those recommendations that you see improving on how to utilize that, you know, their product, right, the gilt, in a better way? What areas are you seeing some improvement on?
The first area that I wanted to address, and they are addressing it, is you know, weight for age at first service. So, you know, what is their average daily live weight gain from, you know, when they're weaned through to when you put them to the boar? I would like to see it at around 600 grams, 650 max, really. But when you get delivery sheets on farms, and this is the reality, and this is where we've got to get to, you're seeing some have grown at 850, 900 grams. Others have grown at 500 grams within a batch coming in. And all you're getting is the birth week, and you get, so you work out the weight they're delivered at, and you just do your sums yourself. There's a tremendous, too wide a spectrum there in the delivery. So they're tightening their deliveries down. They're trying to get the animal, a bit like we did with the boars, keep delivering the same animal. And that's harder because there's many more gilts than there were boars going on farm. And now there's no boars going on farm. They're all in a plastic bag. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't look good at stud. And that's another thing I worked very hard with when I was working with the boars. And so that's the key to begin with. And then obviously the nutrition is very, very important. And so you then pull the nutritionist in, even though the genetic companies will make their own recommendations. Their nutritionists aren't feeding your herd. Your nutritionist is the guy who lives 20 miles down the road and comes home, you know, comes up to you from the mill. So that's tightening that all down. And then it's the management of that animal in terms of its social grouping. We can do so much. But those are the first things that the industry is beginning to pump that information out, and making their recommendations. And of course, it's you know, they've probably been making these for about 18 months. So the gilts that were beginning to come in then are now coming into the engine room stage of if they've got that bit right, they'll begin to see now the benefit of the information that's coming out. The information come out today, but you're not going to see any benefit of that until you're a year, 18 months down the road, and those animals are now in the engine room. And that's really important. And when I talked about herds within the herd, for me, a gilt is a gilt until she's had her second litter anyway. And that's an old-fashioned thing, which I think still stands. So I have a gilt herd in a rolling herd. I have a gilt herd is one and parities one and two. I then have the production herd, the engine room, which is three, four, and five. And then parity six is either the elite sows if you're selecting from your own GPs, or it's a risk herd because you will have some young failures. So you do need something in your back pocket. So your very best sows that get to parity five, having never had a breeding failure, having given you five good litters, they're superb animals to consider. And you do it with the genetic company, with their breeding program. They're elite animals, actually, and they're bedded into the whole environment of the farm. There's no biosecurity risk. You're not bringing anything in, but you are really picking up the genetics that you have nurtured with the help of the breeding company and the nutritionist to get that animal there. It's in my own simple way of looking at things, she's going to leave you some very good females to follow on. But as I said, that needs to be run with the genetic company, because they, and that's where I think they require more information from the farmers today. We need to be getting more information back down the genetic lines to the farm, to the genetic companies from the farmers. So it's, again, one of those two-way things. It's one of those extended colours, if you like. So that's where that leads to. And then as you go on then from that, we're into the ethics. So what the breeding companies are now teaching us is how to care for those animals, because on paper it looks pretty bad when you have all these young females come in, and so many of them don't eat. They actually make a loss. They don't just not make you any profit. They are a loss because they are there's no return on the investment of resource, and they are a resource. So that's a big waste. So ethically, it looks bad. And then environmentally, of course, it looks bad, because that is a resource. So that resource is part of your carbon footprint, and it's giving you no output. And so it's being wasted. So that's where the three E's, just in that particular instance, come into. With the ethics, it works both ways. It works not just for the pigs, but it works for the people too. And that's really important. We're thinking about people and what can we do in terms of ethics in regard to their quality of life in the job that they do. So all three of these also impact the not just the pigs, but the people as well. And that's the principle with three E's. So it's the economics, it's the ethics, and then with the environment, we're just beginning to nibble at it, aren't we? There's a lot of people coming out with some pretty wonderful ideas. And I don't mean that with any cynicism. It's just that these things all take time. I think the thing I've learned most in my life in pigs is that we have to have both a context and a continuity. And if we don't have a context for what we're doing and where we're going and what we're trying to improve and why, then we don't really have continuity. It's just blocks all over the place. Well, I'll give this a go and try it. Whereas we have a context, and if come back to ethics and animal welfare, we do need to keep improving animal welfare, but there is a context to that. You know, it's been a historic journey raising animals for food and having to see that in a way industrialized. It's not a word I particularly appreciate, but it does describe what's happening. That's just a perception of the word that I think a lot of people, you know, get muddled up with. But it is an industrialized process, and therefore we have got to look at the context that it has come, it is embedded in, and we are improving our animal welfare year on year. And that's to be proud. We should be proud as an industry and not feel that we are getting beaten over the head, but we need to stand on the front foot. And so that's why I make these, I embed these in what I do. I'm not just trying to make a farmer make a bit more money. You know, I'm with the flow of the context of the industry I've worked in now for, you know, 55 years. And that continuity has got to keep building on the and the context was, I mean, I castrated thousands of little pigs when I was a youngster, right up into my 30s probably. So glad when they finally decided not to do that. But the context is that's what they'd always done. There was a reason for it. They then found they didn't have to do it and all. So that continues, if that makes sense. And we've got to fight for this industry that we're in because it's a good industry and we are trying to do our best all the time. And these three things applied in any strategic conversation on farm, they give the discussion we're having a context as well, in that we're not just trying to make a little bit more money, then we are looking at everything we're doing, and this embraces it. And we have 3E plus, which incorporates things like enterprise and equality. So the E's, there's a lot of good words beginning with E that we can bring to our industry. So that's really what's behind it, I think.
So tell me about, let's go down to the farmer aspect. So give me an experience or an example of a client or farmer that you've worked with that is practicing the three E's and that has improved their farm by, you know, making, you know, maybe making a small change or a change way back in the guilt development side that you, that has brought to fruition.
Yeah. Although he's retired now, I did work for, with one, he was a pioneer. I went to his farm and sat down with him and explained this a few years ago. And he, and the vet turned up just as we finished the conversation. And he just said to me, "Stephen, shut up, don't say anything." And the vet came in and he put these ideas to the vet and he scratched his, "Well, I don't know about that." He said, I don't think that's such a good idea. "You're all right the way you're doing that sort of thing." And when the vet had gone, Stephen said, "Come on, let's try it." He said to me, "Stephen, come on, we're going to try this." And it was an outdoor herd, about 600 sows outdoors. We got it down to a 1-5 you know, parity distribution with just a few sixes is one of the things we achieved. He was bringing in, because of turnover, he was bringing in, I think, 8 gilts every, I think it was every week he brought in 8 gilts. And then we got that down to 7 and then to 6. And then he got PERS. So we went back up to 8 because we were losing animals in different, you know, parities. We had quite a strong hit of PERS. But you saw what we could achieve, and we still had to face the health element. So all we did was we jacked up the weekly intake. The weaners, you know, they were coming off. You know, we put about 2 kilos on the weaners in the way we managed the animals. The genetics were good, so we were getting good litters. But we were then picking out animals that we do a thing called the service group report, which is another herd within the herd. He was weekly, so he had 20, he was weaning around 4 weeks. So he had 21 herds within his herd. They were all service groups. And within the program that he was recording his pigs, I could pull that data out and reorganize that into the order of parity from 1 through to whatever. We looked at the last 3 litters and we looked at the lifetime. And we began to highlight animals that we didn't want to carry on in the herd, so we would cull them, and next time they would be marked up. So there's then a summary comes with that. So you've got 21 individual herds, which is wonderful because the manager can look at the herd and see all his herds and see them in real detail. And then I just go through and highlight animals I thought they would need to either amber light or red light these animals. Gradually, over time, that improved the whole herd performance. I'm still doing it with one in particular has that runs a GP herd within their herd, and it's been incredible. Again, it's the continuity. It doesn't happen overnight. I would say over the last 5 or 6 years, that herd has improved, and you can see how it's improved through managing it like that with precision. There's hardly any you know, over 5 parities, and there's a lot more retention through in the age groups. There's less replacements coming in. All of that is moving in the right direction. The wonderful thing about the other herd I was telling you about was his nutritionist came round and he showed him round one day, and he used to visit the herd regularly, but he hadn't visited for a couple of years, and we were getting this thing really moving. And he walked through the herd and he said, well, aren't you going to show me the old sows now? Then I ain't seen any old sows, you know, any big birthers. And he said, you've seen all the sows. You've seen every sow on the farm. And he just said, well, what's happening then? So he had to explain the whole situation to him. And the social interaction was much better. And in my own work, I've taken that on, and I've had one or two people give it a try. I don't know how they're getting on at the moment because several people have got out recently in our country of pig production. But one or two were having a go at something I'd suggested, which is where you actually bring all your replacements in one hit. So you would have, on a weekly basis, you would bring them all in week one, and you'd have multiparous sows everywhere. So you'd start with one complete herd within the herd, all one parity. And over 2 years, you go a complete production cycle for the whole herd, and you end up having, I think it's 1 and 5 in the same week, 2 and 3 in the next week, and 4 and 6 in the third week. So you never mix any animals. So, and we can, you know, we can work towards that as an industry, can work that out in the way we build our next buildings, or if we lay our next field plan outdoors, we can work on the basis of we're working towards not actually mixing any sows. That fits into the ethics. It improves the economics with the performance that you get from doing that. And they're the kind of things that we're thinking through. So that was where he got to quite a way, and that was always improving when he finally decided he's the same age as me and he finally decided to retire about 5 years ago, I think now. But that we showed us we could do it, and one or two farms still using the service groups are still seeing continual improvement in the continuous flow herd by having those 21 herds rotating. And the summary that they get once a month is, these are the animals you need to be preparing to replace. So they've got a 4 month lead in to having the right gilt in the right at the right time in their schedule. And that's also important because that's one of the things that goes haywire within herds. They don't plan their gilt intakes. So this helps them to plan their gilt. They've got a 4 month lead in. They've got no excuse not to have a gilt ready in that week, because I think I said this last time, one of the most important dates in the diary for a sow after you've served her is her next service date after she's completed a production cycle. So you've got a whole 5 months ahead. You know, if you've looked at her today and thought, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with her and all, I said, we've got plenty of time to think about it, but you need to be making a decision now, and you'll have a lady there ready to replace her if she's not going to go round again. And they're the things that all help to tighten up the efficiency, really.
Yeah, and if everything goes well, you've predicted right? You know, you don't have to replace her. But yeah, you assume that everything is going to go well. She'll farrow on this day, she'll wean on this day, and she's ready on this day. Yeah, exactly. So a five-month plan.
Yeah.
Sunai is a professional solution provider for enzymes, probiotics, and functional additives. We offer customized formulas to target nutritional issues in livestock and maximize the utility of animal feed. Find us at sunai.com, spelled S-U-N-H-Y, for more information.
So, no, thank you for sharing, your experience and how you can, you know, bring it to the farm. So we're kind of getting near our time today, and it always goes so fast because it's interesting to hear. You build on one thing, builds on another, right? In the philosophy of really being an efficient production system. So before we sign off and talk about our three questions that we ask all of our guests, share with us some, you know, final thoughts. Anything else you want to talk about? What maybe something currently that you're working on that's exciting?
Yes, there's two things there. One, within ethics again, going back to ethics, I want to see the industry adopt triage as one of the skills that is incumbent in the team itself. So I want to see vets teaching operational teams, whether they pick the appropriate person or persons out of the team, get them trained in triage, and that's their first job every day. And that's ethics, because then they can they learn to triage that herd. They learn to go back to the department heads with recommendations for the care of that animal or the euthanizing of that animal, whatever. But if we're going to improve animal welfare, we need to have triage as a skill built into the farm operational teams. So that's one thought that I want to keep working on now.
Yeah, I like that. I actually really like that, because and pick the person who has the best quick observational skills, right? That's what triage is about, is observing and recognizing which animals need help early, right? As a vet, I always have to say early, as quick as possible. So no, I like that word. I haven't used that word before, but yeah, I call it, you know, the pig care specialist or the great observer of the farm.
Yeah. And if people say, well, why? Well, the truth is, if I go and walk around a farm on any day of any week, because of the context of farming and because we're continuing to learn, I will always find a pig that I can say that should have been euthanized. You know, I know you've been caring for it, but it's gone beyond what you can do to help it. Triage should stop all of that. So people could walk on a farm any day of the week and they will not see what the activists are trying to find every time they take their cameras in the dead of night. So triage is a belt and braces, really. You know, one, you're looking after your herd, and two, you're making sure nobody's going to walk onto that herd and find anything you wouldn't want them to find, because you're dealing with that. So that's really good. And the other one, very quickly, I've come up with a new, I've completely finished with pig's wean per sow per year. If anybody tells me they're pig's wean per sow per year, I curl up in a ball in front of them on the ground, because it's a totally meaningless figure. It really doesn't tell you anything. The figure that you need to be looking at in terms of sows and pigs is sows per pigs weaned per year, because that's very, very different. You know, a herd weaning 35 pigs per sow per year is actually using 1.6 sows. So that means they're only weaning, you know, I don't know what that half of 35 is or what, but that, you know, they really, that's where the economics comes into it again. But the one I wanted to share with you tonight was sow conversion ratio. We don't have a sow conversion ratio, and it's not got that much to do with feed. It's all about the fact that the sow is a resource. And one of the economic considerations in managing the finances of a pig herd must be, what is your return on investment of resource? Not investment in resource, but the investment of resource. She's an investment in the herd, that animal. So we want to look at her conversion ratios, not ratio, but ratios. And I've just jotted a few down just to give you an idea. The first one, and of course they all begin with one. So it's the sow is one to what in the ratio. So the first one would be, it's sow, the feed she consumes. So her one is her total feed consumed, and the ratio is against pig sold, total feed consumed, you know, plus the total feed, sow feed consumed. So you're looking at the feed ratio, one sow to how much feed, and that will be an enormous, there'll be an enormous spectrum of result in that. So that's one sow conversion ratio. If you have a target production index, it's the one sow to what the actual production index is against what you'd hoped it would be. So you've got something to benchmark yourself on, and all the time you're looking at the output of the sow, the ratio of output to the sow. That's really what sow conversion ratio is, and it can be anything. I mean, another one I have is my one of my favourites, and one I work with a lot. I work with pigs weaned per ton of sow feed at parity 5, but you could do it for every parity. So you can look at a sow moving through. You can look at, we take, I have a one pig report which says, okay, I'm going to follow this animal as a gilt all the way through to parity 10. So I'm going to make her a parity 10 sow. I'm modelling this, but then I will impose the farm's own performance by parity. So you're following a totem pig all the way through, and it gives you an idea of what your sow conversion ratio is in terms of pigs weaned per ton of sow feed for every parity. And its feed. You know, it's pigs weaned per ton of sow feed. It's a big, big money figure. And it's one you can't find anywhere within the current, you know, offering of metrics. So there's loads. You know, the insemination is another one. One sow to how many inseminations within that life cycle cohort. So there is a whole set that I'm actually just working on at the moment, but it's going to be the sow conversion ratios. And there can be waste in that as well, which is the most wasteful sow in terms of the environment. So again, you come back to the economics, the ethics, and the environmental sustainability. And it has to apply to every sow, that has to have an application within every sow conversion ratio. And you look at it from those three perspectives. So that was what I wanted to share with you to finish up. And also, well, I'll let you ask your questions. That might be in amongst those.
Absolutely. Well, that's interesting, though, a completely different way to look at it, right, than the normal, you know, we call them, I think, kind of everybody has these KPIs, right, that they look on a sow monitor, et cetera. And so this concept is different. And, you know, you have to open your mind to accept something different to analyze your business. But really interesting. And it really goes back, like you said before, it's the one sow and what do the economics look for each of those cohorts as she gets through. And I think, you know, it boils down to retention and efficiency, and how do you get, you know, use all those resources. So
yeah.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at FortivaImpact.com.
Keyes Manufacturing is America's number one source for cheese meal and dairy powders for your feed. Check us out at KeysManufacturing.com.
Vaccinova, formulate to your needs, custom-made vaccines. Visit us at vaccinova.us.com for more info. That's vaxxinova.us.com.
SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions.
Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth.
Have you considered adding cheese to your feed? Let us help. Keyes Manufacturing is a family-owned and operated business, conveniently located in central Illinois. We have been producing Pro 88 cheese powder since 1997. Pro 88 is a high-quality source of protein and milk fat. Our cheese powder is research-proven to contribute to a smooth transition in early weaning pigs, being highly palatable, increasing feed intake, as well as delivering easily digestible nutrients. Check us out at KeysManufacturing.com for more information and links to our research. We look forward to helping you maximize your feed.
Very good. Well, thank you for that. Those really insightful thoughts. For the audience, if you enjoyed our SwineNet podcast today, please comment, share it, and like it on your podcast platform. And if you have questions for Stephen, reach out to him in your comments. He also has a LinkedIn page with some insightful thoughts, even more in depth about what we talked about today. So very much appreciate your time. And now we want to jump into these three questions that we ask all of our guests. So Stephen, and you know, we kind of chatted a year ago, so you know, maybe give us something different beyond those. So what's your favorite book or resource that you use in your area of expertise?
I've got a favorite book at the moment. I really have. It's not really, it's not about pigs, but it's I found it absolutely fascinating. And I think for anybody who's looking out on the world and really wondering, that we have a lady called Melanie Phillips, who's a journalist, and she's probably similar age to myself. And she's written a fabulous book called The Builder's Stone. So anybody who's interested in the world we live, and what she's looking at really is what's eroding the foundations of the Western civilization. That's what it is. That's not as, you know, it's not as a really good subject because she treats it the way she does. So she's looking, if you like, at the context and the continuity. And she'll use, I'll give you an example, education. You know, at school today, she put it very, very simply, but in fact quite profound, when she said children are no longer being taught how to learn, they're being taught what to learn. And that's the kind of thread that runs through in all sorts of ways. And I just found it, I read an interview with her and I thought, I'm going to read that book. And I, at the moment, I can't put it down. It's really, it really opened your own mind up to crumbs. I hadn't really seen it like that, but it makes sense. So that's what I'm reading at the moment. I have my daily devotional, which I told you about a while back, but that is, that's the book I'm reading at the moment.
Great. Well, that sounds interesting. And the Builder Stone, for the audience, if you didn't catch it before. And so how about share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others?
That's interesting. I have a short reading here that I'll read to you. I was reading it earlier today, actually. That's from a book. I won't tell you what the book is, because you'll probably recognise it. But it was this as a piece of advice, and this is how I look at life, and this is, I hope this sums me up and why I'm still in this industry and why I will stay in this industry until the good Lord decides he's had enough of me down here. And it is this: do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility. Value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. And I think I see quite a lot of that in the industry. And I know in my heart that's why I'm still here and why I still look forward to every day of my work as much as I do my family life and the world I live in. So that's really, really helped me immensely. And I think the other thing, and it's a personal thing, I did touch on it before we started talking, is I've learned how important it is to have a role in life. And I haven't had a role for about 12 years, really, because I think what people have to appreciate when they're either employed in a company or they're the employers of somebody, they are giving them something. They have something, or they're giving somebody something that's actually very important in their work, in the context of their work. And I haven't had a role for several years. And I think I told you last time I was talking to three young men in America about they'd founded a company. They're all still doing the day jobs, just as I am. But we have talked now for nearly 18 months, nearly every Thursday night, them first thing in the morning, me last thing at night. And we've worked together. They've got a company called Hale Ag, and they have given me a role in that. You know, as I said, we're not, there's no money changing hands here, but it's helped me immensely to talk with them. And I think the bit that they've got from me is perhaps a greater understanding of the commercial reality. They've got some wonderful ideas. They're very clever, all of them. But I think the lovely thing is it's that extended colours. You know, we're actually finding we can work together in areas that, you know, we perhaps wouldn't have looked at each other and thought that would ever be possible. And that's given me a role. And I can't tell you how good that feels. I've even got a little business card now. And I'm looking at production and husbandry. You know, they're looking at biosecurity, they're looking at environmental control, and they are embedding the three E's in their approach, which is really, that's very gratifying. We're looking at all the metrics that I do, and they're seeing how they can be applied to things like, you know, the payback from biosecurity, the payback from environmental control, this kind of thing. And they're also looking at life cycle and having not thought about life cycle that much before we engaged. So I'm terrible at dropping hints. I've been dropping hints for several years and hope somebody might say, oh, come on, come in here and join us. I must be absolutely rubbish at dropping hints. But I didn't have to with them. They just reached a point where they said, come on, come and join us. And they've done it, you know, very well. Well, I hope we get started because I could do with the job. But the point is, a role is so important in anybody's life, particularly when they love what they do. And some people can lose their role, not through any fault of their own or through a choice they've made that didn't quite work out. But the role is very, very important.
Yeah, it gives you a sense of purpose, right? What are my goals for today, and what am I working on? So, no, very, very great advice. We appreciate your insights. It's been wonderful to talk to you, and hopefully we can do it again on another great topic.
Yes, I enjoy talking to you too. So I've looked forward to this immensely, and yeah, it's been great.
Thank you so much.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.